There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. And just looking through some of the texts from the last half hour when Katie Britt was on, it's going to be an interesting next few months because right now, I mean, looking, I haven't counted every one of them, but it's absolutely like it has been in the past. It looks like it's pretty close split. And not a lot of people that just aren't or one way, you know, that are undecided. It seems like a lot of decided people that really like Katie Britt. And then there's another 50% or so thereabout that really don't like Katie Britt. See if this shows up kind of in the polling, and we'll see that. And then, of course, you bring the other names into the mix as well. You see what it's done with the polling. We continue to have those interviews from now through the primary. Hopefully, you'll get a chance to hear them all. If not, remember, podcast everything we do. 55 hours a week of live local programs from right here at our studios at Airport and 65. They're online. First place they post is the FM Talk 106.5 app, but then you can get them at iTunes or Stitcher or through the website. Just go to fmtalk1065.com. And click the podcast tab, but the app is the fastest way to get those. All right, so that's months away. We're talking days away from regular sessions starting back up in Montgomery. Actually, I think it's 8 days away for session. We'll find out, actually, because this man has it on his calendar. District 105 Representative Chip Brown joining us now. Is it 7 or 8, something like that, right?
It is January the 11th.
Okay.
Which is,
8 days away. So... Yeah, it's here. We've been talking about, you know, you and I have talked so many times, well, do you think you have a special on this, or would there be another special? It seemed to be so far off till regular session, but it's here.
Yeah. All that training, all that preparation, you know, it's game time. So it's next Tuesday, and we've got a lot of issues that we're going to take up. It's going to be an interesting session because it's we go a little early, and during an election year, the way it's set up, we start off the first year of the quadrennium, which is every 4 years. The first year you go and start off in February, then it's a little bit earlier, then it's late January, and then we go early January. But it's going to be an interesting session. We've got some big issues coming up. And
Do you think y'all will tackle some big issues? Because, I mean, listen, it's, you know, the fourth year of quadrennium. People, have not paid attention to this often. Number one, for the reason of getting back and being able to campaign and raise money. But number two, people often don't want to get something that's contentious, a vote on something that's contentious when it's election time, which to me seems contrary to the job. But it's a real thing, right?
Yeah, that is. I mean, you do have people that are hesitant to take up big issues. I think that's unfortunate. You know, we're paid to go up there and make hard decisions, and sometimes you make people happy, and sometimes you make people mad. I mean, but we live in a representative democracy, and we're the people's representatives, and we're, you know, elected to go up there and make decisions on their behalf, and you know, you just try to always make the what you think is the right decision that will be in the best interest of the people of your district. And I think we will take up some controversial issues. I think we'll take up probably critical race theory. I think we'll be brought up. I think there's a good chance that maybe the constitutional carry issue will be brought up. I think we'll have some small business packages, some tax breaks for small businesses, and I think we'll we'll tackle some pretty tough issues. I know there'll be, you know, Senator Albritton from Atmore is saying that he's going to, you know, introduce a gaming package again. So I'm sure that'll
go nowhere.
Some attention. I don't, you know, like you said, it is an election year, so I don't know where that goes. I would love to see a clean lottery bill, you know, come and just have that an opportunity to vote on that. We missed by one vote on the lottery of letting the people vote on it a couple of years ago. So, but I it's going to be an interesting session. You know, you've got a speaker's race going on at the same time, and see how that plays into what happens. And, you know, it's just a lot going on.
Yeah, I don't want to go to a few of those different items you just mentioned one by one. But first, it's money, right on my mind. I mean, you've got the spending. You've got, you know, what is it, $1.5 billion in that ARPA money still out there?
Yeah.
It seems like that should probably dominate some of the discussion, too, how that's going to be allocated.
Oh, yeah, I think so, for sure. You know, and we, you know, you've got a lot of urban versus rural, and you know, everybody has needs, and you know, you got to, I mean, there's issues that we're going to have to tackle with that, and also, you know, what strings are attached to those versus some of that still isn't exactly clear. You know, the original round of that a couple of years ago, that was one of the issues with it, was that the strings that were so tight that were associated with that money, that what we spent the money on was, had to be so closely related to COVID. This one is a little bit different. And
right, it's looser, right? This tranche, or whatever the term, you know, the bucket of money, federal money here, is not, the way I understand it, it's not as tight as it was before. Is that true?
That's right. Okay. That's right. I mean, you've got people spending on drainage issues, and it's a lot broader. I mean, it really is. Economic development, all kinds of things.
What about prisons? What about prisons?
Do what?
What about prisons? What about spending it on prisons?
Well, we've already allocated some of that to prisons, if you recall.
I do, but is it going to be challenged? That's the question. You know, I wonder, is it, will there be this, you know, there's been the rumbling about the federal challenge to this.
Well, I, you know, what I never understand about the challenge to that, though, Sean, is, I mean, it's okay to spend that money on a drainage project or on an economic development project, but those groups that are wanting, you know, Democrat Party, for example, they don't want to spend that money on a percentage of that money. It's a small percentage. Spend that money on prisons when that money's going to have to come from somewhere. So if you're not spending it on prisons, then that's money that's coming from the federal government. If we took it from, let's say, the general fund, then other programs are going to have to suffer. To me, it's an ideal situation to be able to take a percentage of that money and spend it on the prison problem that the federal government has told us we have to correct, or we're going to have a takeover of our prisons. So, to me, I think that was a wise decision to spend that money on the prison situation.
Do you think on other places where money may go, discussions we've had in the past, you think broadband comes back up here, this, you know, the push for, I guess, a state investment into broadband?
I do. You know, we did receive an allocation from the federal government for broadband, and that was dedicated specifically for broadband. And so, but I do think that's in the mix. I think that you know, I had a call yesterday from someone that had a broadband issue down in my district in Codin. And when you look at the map of Alabama and you look at all the spots that are dead spots, meaning that they don't have adequate or they have no internet service, and we are a rural state, but when you look at areas like my district, which is South Mobile County, you know, there's a lot of spots in Grand Bay, there's in Mylabattrie, Codin, Irvington, down, you know, Alabama Port, down around Fowl River, that they don't have access to broadband internet. And so that's, it hurts from an economic development standpoint. That's one of the first questions. I do a lot of work on economic development, and one of the first questions involving the infrastructure is, what type of fiber do you have going through there? What's the backbone? And that helps recruit businesses. It helps in learning. It helps in medical. It helps all the way across the board. It helps you be competitive against other states. It helps the people of our state, in learning and education and healthcare and everything across the board. And so I think that some of that money will go to broadband.
How's the state do that? Does the state step in and, let's say, I mean, I know it's not decided yet, but the idea is here. Would the state come in and pay to put in the infrastructure, or would they put some kind of incentive program in for private companies to do it?
We would do a grant process. And we did that a couple of years ago. I think it was in 2019. I'm on the Urban and Rural Development Committee, as well as, Shane Stringer, Representative Shane Stringer, and Representative Margie Wilcox are on there also. And we passed some legislation in 2019 that created a grant program to provide grants. You have to, it's a competitive process. The cable companies will go in it opened up really for the first time, too, for cooperatives and for power companies to go in and compete. And, if they want to put broadband in an area, I mean, imagine the expense of laying down a fiber network to some areas that are fairly sparsely populated,
mm-hmm.
or even some industrial parks, let's say, might be remote. And the cost, return on investment, you're looking years and years down the road. So a lot of times it's very difficult for those companies to do that. So by incentivizing it, we provide grants for them to go and upgrade the networks or lay that fiber to create a broadband network in specific areas.
Speaking,
that's a better way to do it, I believe.
Okay, and do you think that has a chance? I mean, in this session.
I do. Okay. We actually, like I said, we passed a program
earlier
in 2019, and they're already doing it. Actually, I know in my district, there's been grants awarded to go down, provide competition in Dauphin Island, and to go into Grand Bay, and then recently there's one going into the north part of Bilobattery. So, I mean, we're already doing that, but as far as allocating more funds, I think that's a good possibility. Yeah.
Hey, before we run to the news, we'll come back and talk more issues coming up in session. But HB 25, the hydration bill, what's going on with this? I've seen a lot about this. You sent me something the other day. What is this, for money to buy water and Gatorade for folks that are volunteer firefighters? Or explain this to me.
Well, okay, it was never a problem until 2014, and someone from the Examiner of Public Accounts interpreted the state law and said the only thing that volunteer fire departments and rescue squadrons can use funds for is, they can only use it for equipment that's for fighting fires, let's say, for fire trucks, for, turnout equipment, jackets, vests, respirators, those sorts of things. And that's it. You can't spend money on water, Gatorade, food, any kind of equipment for firehouses or that sort of thing. And so that stopped. And so you had some bureaucrat make this decision. And so meanwhile, you've got firefighters that are out there fighting fires that have to bring their own water or Gatorade to the fire. The microwave goes out at the firehouse. You got people, going there and spending time there, and they have to have a separate fund to raise money to replace the microwave. They have to have either rely on donations or people dropping off Gatorades or what have you, or you bring your own. And it's just ridiculous. That's an example of government getting in the way of common sense. And so what my bill does is HB 25, and it allows volunteer fire departments to allocate money for that. If they, I mean, you have circumstances like in Grand Bay. I know they have. I have three volunteer fire departments that work I-10, and they'll have chemical spills. There's one not too long ago in Grand Bay where they were out there for 36 hours fighting this chemical spill, and they had to bring their own water and Gatorade. I mean, they're out there after hurricanes, tornadoes, floods. So what my bill does is it allows them to allocate money for hydration, to provide water, to provide Gatorade. If, you know, they need equipment for the firehouse, a refrigerator, a microwave, allows them to spend money on that. Because the thing is, those fire departments are audited every single year. So it's not like you could really misuse the funds anyway. And so they're going to be audited. And you got to take care of the people that are coming out there and volunteering their time. I mean, it's, you know, recruiting is down for volunteer fire departments across the country. It's way down. And so those people are giving their time, then we need to help them all we can.
All right, coming right back. More of Representative District 105, Chip Brown, our guest. Session starts in 8 days. Lots more to talk about as we move on. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile on this Monday. Glad to have you along. I'll tell you what I did is I went long in the last segment, which doesn't leave me a lot of time before the hard break, as they call it, for the bottom of the hour news that we'll go to in a second and continue our conversation with Representative Chip Brown. Let me do this, though. I got people on the text line. I guess you got them started when it's the discussion of broadband. So, Congressman, how do they get in touch with you? What's the best way to, you know, for one of your constituents in 105 to reach you?
Probably to email me is the best thing. It's Chip at chipbrown105.com.
Okay. So Chip at chipbrown105.com. And yeah. People, okay, because people are asking pretty specific questions too on that stuff. So I know it's best probably instead of dealing with it here on the air to do that. But yeah obviously yeah. People have, there's people in those dead zones you were talking about internet wise that are interested.
Sure. Just tell them to reach out to me. I'll be happy to help them if I can.
All right. We come back from the break. I do want to talk. We got about 30 seconds here. I want to talk about you joined us, gosh, was it a month or two ago to talk about the mask bill to give parents a choice on this? Because I know a lot of schools are going back to masks now.
Yeah. I have a bill that it allows parents to opt out of mask mandates. And it's that simple. I mean, you would just fill out a form requesting that your child not have to wear a mask, and he doesn't wear a mask. And but it's really a parental choice bill. It allows parents that want their child to wear a mask to still continue to wear a mask. I think it puts the power back in the hands of the parents.
All right,
that's where health decisions should be made.
We'll get to the details on that and more of what's coming up in session with Chip Brown next, right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At BTW, the way we started today's show with an in-depth discussion and a look at solutions for the squirrel overpopulation in Bienville Square, it's now the top of the stack on every TV website. Welcome, TV folks, to Squirrelmageddon. Talk more about that coming up, I'm sure, tomorrow morning with Dan and Dalton. Maybe an idea is to get my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Trey, y'all move squirrels? They move everything else, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And that's one thing you often think about them coming and, like, getting boxes out of something or, you know, maybe like an old sofa or something like that. But they get big stuff, too. Trey and the crew, I mean, above-ground pools, swing sets. Like, if you've got the full Redwood swing set with the Pirates lookout on it and your youngest child's in, like, graduate school or something like that, let it go. Let 1-800-GOT-JUNK get rid of it. It could be a storage building in the backyard and everything in it. They can do that as well. Get rid of it. Use 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Storage unit you need cleared out. They've got that. Junk room in your house, wherever. You got junk, you need it gone. It's a new year. You've made the resolution to get organized. It's a lot, here's a pro tip. A lot easier to be organized when you have fewer things. So get rid of it with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. My buddy Trey's been doing it 14 years here in Mobile and Baldwin County. Great people, great company. And online, you can set that appointment at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or just pick up the phone and give them a call at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, continue our conversation with District 105 Representative Chip Brown and session just 8 days away. And we're kind of talking about things that will come up. Now, there's bills that you've been talking with me about over the last couple months that have been pre-filed. And we talked about the volunteer fire department one. But the mask bill, remind folks about this mask bill. What does your mask bill say?
Well, it's probably one of the shortest bills that I've ever been involved in, which I like that. I prefer simplicity over complication, for sure. It's a page and a half, maybe. But all it says is that it puts the power back in the hands of parents, that if it allows parents to opt out of school mask mandates. And what that means is if, let's say, Mobile County Public Schools decides that children need to wear masks, but you don't think it's right for your child, whether that be for a health reason, a personal reason, whatever. They're your children, and you should have the final say-so on that. And so what it does is allows you to write a letter to the school and say, I want my child to opt out of the mask mandate, and your child will opt out of the mask mandate. And if you want your child to wear a mask, then your child can wear a mask. I think we live in, the conversations about mask and about vaccine mandates. I believe we live in a country, Sean, we're supposed to live in a country where we have freedoms, we have individual rights, we have individual choices. And if you don't want to wear a mask, you shouldn't be forced to wear a mask. And if we don't have a mask mandate for adults, then by God, we shouldn't have one for children. I mean, to me, it's a simple issue. Whose children are they? Are they the school's children? Are they the government's children? No, they're the parents' children. And so the parents should have the ultimate say-so and make those decisions for their kids. And that's basically what my bill does. It just puts the power back in the hands of the parents.
We'll be watching that one. Another one you mentioned at the beginning, the items you think will come up in this session is the constitutional carry or permitless carry. I don't know what the language du jour is on it. What's your feeling on that, on concealed carry permits being removed as a requirement to conceal and carry in Alabama?
Well, I think one of the things that's always lost in that argument is, the argument is always pitched as either or. You're either going to have permits or you're not going to have permits. But the reality is permits are not going to go away because...
No, the requirement, though. Right?
I mean, well, right, as a requirement. But they're not going to go away because you're still going to have individuals that want to travel across state lines, and when they go to other states, they're going to need a pistol permit to travel to that state. And so that argument about, well, you're going to completely do away with pistol permits is just not true. And then you get into the argument of prohibitive people. Right now you can stop them by having, pistol background checks. Well, one, you get a background check when you purchase a pistol anyway. And then also we did create last year that lifetime carry permit. And along with that, though, we created a prohibited database. And so what that does is it says, like right now, the only time that you're in that database is if you go to try to get a concealed carry permit, and then your name pops up, and they say, oh, well, you can't get a concealed carry permit. But what the database that we pass says, hey, that guy, is a known terrorist. That guy has, four felony convictions, and it basically achieves the same thing. It tells law enforcement that guy shouldn't be carrying a pistol, regardless if he has a permit or not. It tells you that he shouldn't be carrying. And you know, it weeds out that. It allows the people that are law-abiding citizens who currently purchase pistols right now, pistol permits anyway right now. I mean, your bad guys aren't going down there and purchasing pistol permits to go out and commit a robbery. They're just not. And so what this does is it singles out those individuals that shouldn't get pistol permits anyway, but it allows law-abiding citizens to carry and not have to go through that process.
Folks from law enforcement, though, will come on and talk about it with me and say it does help them if they, and I know there's a lot of different examples. I'll pick one. They pull over a vehicle, and in that vehicle, there's a person that is a felon, right? And then there's a gun in the vehicle. That if no one has a concealed carry permit, then they can pull that, you know, pistol and look at it and check if it's stolen and obviously make a case there, where if it's not, then somebody else who's not a felon can just say, oh, it's my gun. You know, it helps them secure those guns that are on the street.
Yeah, but you're right. What you're doing, though, there in that circumstance, you're looking specifically for people that have or do not have pistol permits. What you would do, what you have on the prohibited database is, you're looking to see if that person is in the prohibited database, because that same individual that they're talking about that doesn't have a concealed carry permit, he's not gonna go get a pistol permit anyway. You see what I'm saying? So you're still gonna have those fines anyway, because he's gonna be a person that's carrying a pistol that he's a convicted felon. He shouldn't be carrying a pistol.
But what about the person, I guess, so, they would say, the other person is in the vehicle. You and I are riding, right? And I'm the convicted felon. And then I say, it's not my gun, it's your gun. You know, and you're not a convicted felon. So they'll say, you know, that people just can lie to law enforcement and move the gun to the other person.
Well, they could do that now anyway. I mean, they could do that either way. You see what I'm saying? It doesn't, it kind of negates that. It's like, The argument is more or less the same thing. So, but regardless of that, I think that bill, it's going to come up. I think there's a good chance that it will. There's two versions of that. Representative Shane Stringer has a bill. Mm-hmm. Representative Andrew Sorrell has a bill. I think one of those will come up. More than likely, if I was a betting man, I would bet that it's going to be Representative Stringer's bill. And we'll have to see how that goes. You know, the caucus, the House Republican caucus, has taken a position on it. And we'll have to see how that goes.
But Would you be a yes vote on either of those?
Well, I support the Constitution. And I think the Constitution supports the right for people to bear arms. And I think that... you know, way that those bills are written right now, I am supportive of where they're headed. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
All right, Representative, it's 8 days and counting. So next time we talk to you, it may be it may be while you're already underway and in session. So best of luck in that, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate you. Representative Chip Brown joining us, District 105. And so we'll, of course, more of that discussion coming up as we get the last 7 days here before session gets started. And then, of course, when they're in session, Jeff and I and Dalton and Dan will be reporting on this. And I'm probably, because last year we couldn't go up for session. Because all the COVID rules and all that, if that does not change, hopefully we'll go back to what we did. And at least once, if not more than once, take the show on the road. Midday Mobile, probably Jeff Poore's show as well, will be live from Montgomery as we watch session unfold up there. So prepare yourselves. All right. Coming back, speaking of Dan, he takes over. It's time for a checkup right here on FM Talk 1065, online at fmtalk1065.com.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
Hey, old Stan Brennan on FM Talk 1065, and it is time for a checkup. And we've got a
Gentlemen, we haven't had a chance to actually meet before today because he's brand new to Alabama Orthopedic Clinic. Dr. Ramon Rodriguez, new at alortho.com and Alabama Orthopedic Clinic. Number one, welcome to Mobile, but you didn't have to come that far, right?
That's correct.
Talk about where you've been.
So after I finished my residency at South, I spent a year in Birmingham doing a foot and ankle fellowship with Dr. John Gould at the American Sports Medicine Institute. Then I spent the last 14 years working in Louisiana. The last 10, in fact, have been at Tulane University in the Department of Orthopedics. I ran the foot and ankle division at Tulane Orthopedics.
Okay, so foot and ankle is your specialty?
It is.
Is it, what's the title there? Would it be orthopedic?
Well, I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and I just happen to specialize in foot and ankle ailments.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the foot and the ankle, and I could talk to you about my own injury here, but let's start with, you're specializing in foot and ankle surgery. You've done it for a number of years in New Orleans. What's the difference between an ankle fracture and an ankle sprain? Working football games in the fall, this is something that comes up all the time.
Right. So, well, an ankle sprain has to deal with the ligaments, and an ankle fracture specifically is dealing with the bones themselves.
Okay.
So it's the ligaments are what attaches bones to bones, and the bones themselves are the fibula, the tibia, and then all the foot, the bones of the foot.
Is one more severe than the other in terms of recovery and getting it back together?
That's a great question. I mean, so some would say that it's almost better to have a fracture because there's more of a finite time to heal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bone will typically heal in about 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But the sprain may not even be detected for, or there would be a longer recovery, in that. But that's just a general term. I mean, certainly I'd rather have a sprain than a fracture,
mm-hmm.
because I can probably walk through a sprain where I might not quite be able to walk on a fracture.
But they talk about athletes, right? Sometimes that's where that comes up, where you might as well break it because the sprain's going to linger.
That's correct.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
And there are certain different types of sprains, but some are more subtle and some are easily rehabbed.
So what are some of the ways that not just these athletes on Friday nights, but a guy like me, how do I sprain or fracture an ankle? I've been, so far so good, but how does it happen?
Well, often the mechanism is quite similar. So it's a twisting injury that's typically going to be the result of, or be the cause for the fracture or the sprain. So it's just the gives out the point of least resistance. And that's kind of sometimes, but sometimes it's more dumb luck than it is. But I think it's all dependent on how the foot, what's the constraining portion, where the foot position is, and what gives as a result, whether the fracture breaks or the ligament gives.
Okay, so there's a fracture. Say I've got a fracture, or somebody listening right now has got one. Do all fractures need surgery?
No.
Okay.
Not all fractures need surgery. Now, we talk about stable versus unstable fractures, and it all depends. So I use a classification where the fracture is in relationship to the ankle joint itself.
Okay.
And some that are, if you're at the point of where the ankle pivots, that in higher, those typically probably do need an operation. But it all depends. We do some special x-rays to determine whether they need to be fixed. Otherwise, we would leave, we can manage a lot of things with a boot. And quite frankly, I think many fractures do not need operation.
Okay. We're talking with Dr. Ramon Rodriguez, native of New Orleans, but attended the University of South Alabama, right?
I did my orthopedic residency at
Orthopedic clinic at Alabama Orthopedic Clinic, and he basically specializes in foot and ankle. So if you got something going on down there, first of all, they can come see you about a problem, not necessarily understanding that they've got to have surgery, right? They can just get a consultation about whatever the problem is.
Absolutely. Most of what I do is about education of the patient and letting them know what, the diagnosis, what they have, and the treatment options so that they're allowed.
You talk about options. What are some of the non-operative options for the foot and the ankle injuries? And I guess it certainly depends on the injury, but give us an idea what other methods or paths we can go down.
So certainly we would do, in addition to the evaluation, there may be some things that would benefit from a physical therapy regimen, an activity modification, a boot that they may be able to, or a brace that we could put them in to help them get through the injury to a point where they're able to recover and get out of the brace. And then there'll be some analgesia, you know, maybe there'll be some anti-inflammatory that we can prescribe to help them through the injury.
So stretching and therapy like that, that's also prescribed?
Certainly. I mean, it's more, you know, stretching, that'll be something that we would actually demonstrate to the patient. This is the proper technique of how to do this. This is when you want to do it, how often you want to do it, and that type of prescription.
I wouldn't know anything about stretching my ankle or foot. What does that entail?
Well, many of the things that I take care of, like the plantar fasciitis or Achilles tendonitis, would be just a simple heel cord stretch that I would demonstrate to them. Now, there may be some shoe wear modifications that we were talking about, orthotics, where we can put them in to help the foot rest throughout the day. And then there'll be some things that we might want to recommend, an icing protocol or something like that.
You said a word right there that we all know well, because it's such, I guess, a devastating injury that it's associated with other devastating things in life. And that's the Achilles injuries, right?
Correct.
The Achilles heel. So how often are Achilles injuries, you know, how often do they pop up? How common are they? And do they all have to be surgically taken care of?
So the... You know, that's an excellent question. The Achilles rupture is probably a small proportion of Achilles injuries in the grand total. And then there's been some debate in my society that talks about the management of Achilles, whether it is operative or non-operative. And certain parameters that do fit for, in Canada, for instance, many of them are treated non-operatively. But it's all about the health system and how quick the patients are able to get into the health system. And I think there's a, depending on how far the tendons are separated, that would dictate whether it needs to be fixed. But in our society, in the United States, I think many of these are probably managed with surgery. When Kobe Bryant or Dan Marino has an Achilles rupture, as we all saw when they were on the field or the court, they did not have non-operative management. They went back they had surgery and they were able to make it back on the field.
And how quickly, you know, I know it depends on the patient, but talk about recovery time for an Achilles surgery.
Certainly for the athlete, it's a season-ending injury, most likely. It's going to take, for any tendon to heal to itself, it's going to take at least 6 weeks for that tendon to heal. And then you're talking about starting a rehab protocol and process. And that's going to be probably 3 to 6 months of rehab. And there's some newer techniques that we can do that we don't violate the blood supply to it. And we can put our sutures outside of the zone of injury. Mm-hmm. And that may, I found that has helped some of my patients in, you know, get to a point where they're able to accelerate that program. But it's still, you know, I had an athlete who was able to do an end stage thing recently at its early as 2 months. And I think that may be more his DNA than mine. He's got some preferred DNA, but certainly the techniques that we were able to install were able to have him get back to an active level very quickly.
Dr. Ramon Rodriguez, two things. Welcome to Mobile. Welcome back to Mobile. And welcome to Alabama Orthopedic Clinic. And of course, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Want to find out more about Alabama Orthopedic Clinic? You can easily online, alortho.com.